is on our docket this morning that has similar issues. And since we are doing this via Zoom, we thought to best replicate a courtroom experience to allow the counsel for SpaceX, which is the second case, to remain in the Zoom video piece that he could participate, he could see and hear. But we would ask that he turn off his video and keep muted during the argument in the first case. In the second case, counsel for Amazon and for the Teamsters negotiating committee is also welcome to do the same during the SpaceX case if you'd like. All right. The first case is 24-50761, Amazon.com Services LLC versus National Labor Relations Board. Mr. Cox.
Your Honors, and may it please the Court, Trevor Cox from Hunt and Andrews Kurth on behalf of Amazon.com Services LLC, Amazon. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal, please. We are here on the District Court's effective denial of Amazon's motion for a preliminary injunction to temporarily pause unconstitutional proceedings in the NLRB. Amazon has raised three different claims, all of which are meritorious, but even one of which is sufficient for entry of a preliminary injunction. I'd like to focus my time and the Court's attention on three critical points, one for each claim. I'll return to each in greater detail, but just to quickly preview them here. First, I'd like to explain why Amazon's removal claim does not implicate Humphrey's executor and why the structure of the NLRB makes the analysis here different from cases involving other agencies. And that is because the NLRB lacks the mandatory partisan balancing requirement of other agencies like the FTC and the Consumer Product Safety Commission. The absence of such a requirement, combined with the executive power that it exercises, creates excessive insulation in the NLRB. It differentiates the NLRB from other agencies and takes it outside the scope of Humphrey's executor and this court's decision in Consumers Research. The second thing I'd like to address is with respect to Amazon's Seventh Amendment claim, which stems from the extraordinary nature of the damages the NLRB is seeking in this unfair labor practice case. Namely, the board seeks to order Amazon to compensate employees for, quote, the lost opportunity to engage in collective bargaining, end quote, which would counterfactually assume in calculating a remedy that if Amazon had negotiated with the union earlier, Amazon would have agreed to a certain package of pay or benefits. That assumption is not only speculative, but it runs contrary to the provision of the NLRA that requires employers and employees to negotiate in good faith, but expressly states that neither party is required to agree to any particular proposal. And let me emphasize, the question here is not whether Amazon is liable or whether this legal relief is warranted. It's only that because this form of damages is sought to be imposed under the Seventh Amendment, Amazon is entitled to have the relevant issues decided by a jury. A PI would preserve the status quo and allow the district court to consider that claim without subjecting Amazon to the unconstitutional proceeding. And finally, as to Amazon's separation of powers claim, it's pretty obvious, but I want to underscore why, on the unique circumstances of this case, it would be improper for the board to determine whether Amazon engaged in an unfair labor practice by not negotiating with workers. And that is because in the underlying representation case, Amazon's primary objection is that the board itself improperly interfered with the election by exercising its prosecutorial authority in the way that it did. The board cannot fairly consider objections regarding whether the board misused its prosecutorial powers. Due process guarantees that no man can be a judge in his own case. And on this very unusual set of facts, Amazon asks for a PI to pause the proceedings while its claim is litigated to prevent board members from being permitted to sit in judgment of their own conduct. Nothing in the NRLA strips the district court's jurisdiction under 1331 to address any of these claims, and Amazon would be irreparably harmed by the here and now injury of having to submit to unconstitutional proceedings, because as the Supreme Court has held, that injury is impossible to remedy once the proceeding is over. That's the Axon case, of course. The court should grant the PI and pause the NLRB's challenge proceeding until Amazon's claims can be resolved on the merits. I welcome the court's questions, but otherwise we'll address each of these claims in turn.
Well, counsel, I have a preliminary concern about whether or not we have jurisdiction. In order to have jurisdiction, we have to agree that there was an effective denial of a motion. Isn't that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. And there was an effective denial here. The inquiry is whether the district court had an adequate chance to consider the relief that was being sought. And everyone was well aware of the deadline that was imposed by the NLRB. And it was clear throughout the proceeding below that unless a decision were reached by the court by September 27, that Amazon would consider that an effective denial. And that's exactly
when was the first time you told the court that you needed a decision by September 27?
Well, the date changed. Originally, it was September 13 was the date of the brief that needed to be filed. But the urgency of the relief sought was apparent from the get-go, because the relief sought in the complaint was a temporary restraining order and a preliminary injunction, followed by a temporary restraining order, a motion for a TRO. So the district court set a hearing for that 2 weeks later, and everyone went into that hearing thinking, well, we're going to know by the end of this hearing whether this TRO is going to be granted or not. The NLRB pushed off the deadline that was otherwise applicable in order to accommodate that hearing, but then it refused to push off the deadline further, which would to allow the district court to actually reach a decision on that. And so following the TRO hearing, which sort of became a PI hearing because it was everyone was heard.
So he set a hearing for September 24.
That's correct, Your Honor. Yes.
You would have been fine with that, you say, but he needed to rule that day. Is that your problem, that he didn't make a ruling that day?
I think everyone's expectation, Your Honor, at the hearing was that because a TRO is an emergency, urgent relief, you have to think very carefully about whether you ask for it. It had already been several weeks since that had been requested, and so I think everyone's expectation was that day they would know whether there was a TRO or a PI that was being entered. And then the district court did not make a decision, and so Amazon, facing down this deadline imposed by the NLRB refused to push that deadline off. And so the consequence of that was that we had to consider the lack.
Well, at the end of the September 24th hearing, he said he wanted some supplemental briefing by September 27th. Isn't that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor. And you didn't give
any pushback when he announced that deadline, did you?
I think that we reiterated that we needed a decision by the 27th. My colleague, Ms. Rogers, underscored that for the court on pages 66 and 67 of the hearing transcript. And then on September 26th, the day before, Amazon alerted the court in that supplemental briefing, look, we really need a decision. The NLRB has refused to push off this imposed deadline, which would have resolved all of this. And when that decision did not come, the effective denial was complete.
So when do you think the effective denial was complete? What date?
September 27. When there was no decision. And we alerted the court that in order for us to seek relief from the Fifth Circuit by 2 p.m., I think was the deadline, earlier in the day would have been the last chance for the district court to actually rule on the motion. So I think it was apparent from the very beginning, 3 weeks earlier, that this is what we're dealing with. Again, the NLRB could have avoided all this by pushing off the briefing deadline pending a decision by the district court, but it refused to do that.
Counsel, can you point to any part of the record where you specifically advise the court that you need a ruling by September 27th, other than that letter on September 26th?
I think that the September 27 date appears in opposition to the motion to transfer, I believe. I want to make sure I don't misstate, Your Honor.
Okay. And I'm not asking about where it appears. I'm asking about a specific request to the court for a ruling by that date.
Well, it certainly was in the hearing itself as well. And if you go back to the transcript, there was discussion about the 27th being the operative deadline.
Well, there's a difference between discussion in my mind and a specific request. So I'm interested in a specific request.
Well, I mean, it's sort of inherent in the idea of a TRO that was being requested. This is emergency urgent relief. And the reason why that was clear was because of that applicable briefing deadline. So that was clear from the very beginning. Again, the date of that deadline changed. I believe it was September 13th, and the board pushed off that deadline to the 27th. But I don't think there was any confusion that was what Amazon considered the operative deadline. And I think that appears throughout the proceedings below. And so we think that that effective denial was complete, and that everything that occurred after in the district court lacked jurisdiction and has no effect on the appeal in this court. That's certainly the holding in the Fort Worth Chamber of Commerce case from this court. I want to also push back a little bit on the suggestion that that Amazon should have done something else. I think that's exactly what we did, was to put the court on notice that this is a deadline. It's not an artificial deadline. It's not even a deadline that Amazon imposed. It was imposed by the NLRB. So it's not an artificial emergency at all. And Amazon acted diligently, consistent with the Fort Worth Chamber of Commerce case, to file a complaint only 5 days after the NLRB denied Amazon's request for review in the underlying administrative proceeding.
Well, counsel, I guess my problem is, so you get it, the judge announces he wants merits-related supplemental briefing by September 27th, and there's no objection to that. So you wanted him to receive the briefing on the 27th, read it, review it, vet it, and rule all on the 27th. And that seemed reasonable to you at the time he announced the 27th as his deadline.
I think the hearing would show that we doubled down on the idea that the court needed to rule by the 27th. I don't know that we were in a position to tell the court no, but we did tell the court on September 26th, reiterating the need for a decision by the 27th.
I guess where I'm stuck at is, I'm at September 24th, when he set a September 27th deadline for supplemental briefing, which I guess you had till the end of the day on September 27th, and there was no objection to that at the time he set it. So you had to have expected that he would, if the 27th was already your hard deadline, then you had to have expected that he's going to receive a brief, I guess, at the end of the day, and then he's going to rule on the very same day, and if not, that's an effective denial. That just doesn't seem reasonable to me.
Well, Your Honor, I the district court had plenty of time to consider this request for a TRO. Didn't have to set a hearing, took 2 weeks to do that. It was clear that we consider this emergency relief that needed to be granted. Walked into the hearing thinking that a TRO was going to be granted that day, and I think some of the judge's comments in the hearing suggest that the court understood that to be the request. So the fact that we did not tell the court, didn't tell the court in another way, doesn't mean that the judge was not aware of our need for a decision by the 27th. In fact, the letter on September 26th reiterated that.
Yeah, so, you told him the day before you needed tomorrow.
Yeah, well, that's not unusual on a TRO, as your honor is well aware, that TROs can be issued at any time. There was a lot of process.
Was there any discussion at the hearing that the NLRB could rule, and the NLRB said, no, we'll wait till you get the briefing and we get a ruling?
The NLRB refused to put a time certain on it. There was discussion and acknowledgement that the NLRB could theoretically rule at any time, but that typically it could take weeks or longer. But that's a sort of a hollow assurance. And in order to protect our interests, we had to assume that as soon as our brief was filed, that the NLRB could take action. So
did the NLRB say we could rule at any time, but it might take longer? Or did they specifically say, no, we will not do anything on the 27th until after the 27th?
They, to my recollection, did not provide that insurance. In fact, they refused to stay the deadline or push off the deadline pending an opportunity for the court to actually consider to have a longer period of time to consider the issues that had been raised.
The deadline, the 27th, that was for the filing of a response. Is that correct?
That's correct. A response to the general counsel's motion for summary judgment. So our response would sort of, there'd be no further activity from us, and then the board could rule on that motion.
And you thought they could rule the day that you filed your response?
Yes, theoretically possible. And the NLRB did not suggest that they would not do that, provide no assurance that they would not do that. They provided some indication that typically it takes weeks or even months for that to happen, but that is not, that provided little assurance to Amazon that in order to protect its rights, it wouldn't have to go to the court, which is what we did in the first place.
Why wouldn't the date that they actually took action be the date to seek emergency relief?
Because at that point, the harm would already be done, which is sort of the point of the various claims that we've raised in this case. We want to seek to stop the NLRB from engaging in unconstitutional proceedings. And so as soon as we are aware in August that the NLRB intended to take action in what we call the C case, we filed a complaint to stop that from proceeding. And again, we sought a TRO, very urgent relief. The district court set a hearing for weeks off. We walked into the hearing thinking we were going to get an answer, advised the court of the relevant deadlines, and no decision came. And so at that point, we had to consider our request denied and obviously appealed it to this court, which—
Counselor, your time has expired.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honors. Tyler Weiss on behalf of the NLRB and other named defendants. This case should be dismissed for lack of jurisdiction. As the Supreme Court and this court have consistently held, appellate jurisdiction based off of effective denials should be limited as it interferes with the regular operation of the courts and invites precisely the type of mischief that Amazon has wrought here. Specifically, the Supreme Court established in Carson two elements that must be met in order to find an effective denial of relief. First, that, quote, serious, perhaps irreparable consequence will result if immediate relief is not granted. And second, a finding that the order can be effectually challenged only by immediate appeal. Amazon has fallen far short of meeting these elements here. First, Amazon has singularly failed to establish how, quote, serious, perhaps irreparable consequence would result had the district court been able to proceed along its normal course. Indeed, the evidence in this case uniquely demonstrates that the district court did decide these issues in this case on a timely basis by denying the requested TRO and ordering that the matter be transferred to DDC on Sunday, September 29th, before the September 30th date when the board could have issued a decision. Second, there is no argument that the district court's alleged failure to act can be effectually challenged only by immediate appeal. Indeed, there has been no failure to act. The district court acted before the imaginary deadline created by Amazon. The only reason this case has not been transferred to, and perhaps even resolved by, the District of Columbia is because of Amazon's procedural machinations. This should not be countenanced. And I'd like to start my detailed remarks on this front by talking about the Chamber of Fort Worth case that my opposing counsel mentioned. In that case, this court emphasized, that effective denial depends on the specific circumstances of a case, both as to the plaintiff's actions in pressing its effective denial arguments, and also the harm that would result if the agency were allowed to proceed along its normal course. Now, both of these factors in Fort Worth stand in stark contrast to Amazon's conduct here. What the plaintiffs did in Fort Worth is they provided clear deadlines from the outset of the case. They established a deadline to the court, said, court, you need to rule by this time or we're going to consider our relief effectively denied. And after the district court didn't meet that initial deadline, plaintiffs set another clear deadline to the district court when they said, court, you know, we really need a ruling by this date, and if we don't get it, we're going to suffer serious, perhaps irreparable consequence.
What if the NLRB had ruled on Friday the 27th? I think that was a Friday, right?
That's correct. It was a Friday.
Where would we be?
So I think it would depend in part on the scope of the ruling, Your Honor. there is admittedly a chance that the board's decision on the motion for summary judgment could be the conclusion of the administrative case before the NLRB, but that's not necessarily the case. And one thing in particular that I'd like to draw the court's attention to is—
Well, this was a summary proceeding, and my question is, what if the NLRB had granted summary relief on the 27th, where would we be?
Well, that could be the termination of the administrative proceeding. Had the board, in an unprecedented fashion, I'm certainly not aware of the board ever doing this, but had the board snap decided a decision on September 27th after receiving Amazon's reply briefing. Again, that's not—
So where would we be if they issued a final summary decision on the 27th? Procedurally, where would we be?
Well, I think the administrative proceeding would likely have concluded at that point had the board addressed all issues in the case.
And so then where would the appeal lie at that point?
Well, the appeal would lie in Amazon's hands at that point. They would be able to appeal the final board order to a circuit court, as is normally done in NLRB proceedings.
Would they raise the same issues that they're raising in front of the district court here, saying all of the same issues?
Yes, they certainly could, Your Honor. They could raise the removal restrictions. They could raise the combination of functions. They could argue that, you know, to the extent the board actually overrules its existing precedent and—
But hasn't the Supreme Court said you don't have to wait for an adverse ruling to raise these? Wasn't that the holding in a case that went up a few years ago?
No, I don't believe so, Your Honor. I think the case that you might be referring to, unless you're thinking of a different one, is the Axon holding. And I think the Axon holding in particular is not relevant to the question of relief. That decision was a question of jurisdiction.
No, the case I'm thinking was, I should have looked it up before this morning. There was an action to stop an administrative prosecution there was an administrative proceeding going on, and the court said, well, you don't have to wait till you lose the ranch before you have to file an appeal to challenge these certain issues. Does that case have relevance? You don't have to bet the ranch, basically.
I don't believe so, Your Honor. First of all, you know, this isn't a case where Amazon is having to bet the ranch or suffer any serious, perhaps irreparable consequence.
Well, they would have lost. In the Supreme Court held, you don't have to wait till you lose to raise these kinds of issues. What is that case relevant or not?
No, I don't believe so, Your Honor, because, again, you know, I think as this court has recognized, the merely proceeding through an administrative process is not irreparable harm. And in particular, I think Amazon's conduct bears reference here. So this case began back in 2021, I believe, December 2021, with the filing of an election petition by the Teamsters Union. And Amazon sat on its hands for years, while it allegedly suffered irreparable harm by participating in board proceedings. It didn't raise these claims at any point before the administrative agency. Even after it filed its complaint in the District of Texas, it still hadn't raised these claims before the NLRB. It was only in its reply briefing on September 27th that Amazon first brought these claims before the National Labor Relations Board. And so I think,
Is there an exhaustion requirement?
I believe there is, Your Honor. Typically, when parties don't raise arguments in a timely fashion before the board, our appellate counsel will argue that the failure to do so bars those arguments under Section 10.
Even when you're talking about the constitutional legitimacy of the agency?
Yeah, well, Your Honor, I don't think we would have a 10E argument here because Amazon did belatedly, certainly, but did raise these arguments to the board in its reply that it filed on September 27th. But I think the important point to recognize, and it's related to the fact that we're talking about equitable relief here, is that Amazon is saying that merely participating in an agency proceeding is irreparable harm. Yet, on the other hand, Amazon participated in these proceedings for years and never raised these constitutional arguments, despite the fact that they were present throughout the entirety of these proceedings. And in fact, Amazon claims that it was entitled to wait until it got an adverse ruling in the underlying proceeding to file its appeal. I think that has it exactly backwards. That's the type of sand.
We're running short on time, so let me ask you about the Seventh Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
In deciding that issue, do we focus on the nature of the claim and whether there was a comparable or similar common law claim, or do we just look at the remedy, whether money damages or money compensation will be awarded?
I think they're both relevant, Your Honor, but I think as a threshold matter, before I touch on, you know, the Seventh Amendment elements that this court and the Supreme Court discussed in Jarchese, I think there's a fundamental stop or precedent that prevents you from even getting to that question. And that's the Supreme Court's decision in Jones and Laughlin, which in that decision, the Supreme Court held that there is no Seventh Amendment right to board proceedings because board proceedings enforce public, not private rights. And if you look at how this court analyzed the Seventh Amendment issue in Jarchese, it said that it first looks at, you know, is the claim one of a nature at law, and then is the remedy one of a nature at law? And if the answer to both those questions is yes, then you look at whether the public rights exception nonetheless removes it from the scope.
I understand that's a separate argument. I just want to, I'm asking, just solely focusing on the Seventh Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
What do we look at? Do we look at, was there a common law cause of action for this? Or do we look at the remedy in deciding whether it comes within the common law right to a jury under the Seventh Amendment?
Yes, Your Honor. I think in the Supreme Court's Jarchese decision makes this clear. You look at both. You look at first, you know, is, and I guess the Supreme Court did it in a different order, but either way, they're both relevant to the inquiry. So you look at first, is the nature of the action one that arises at common law? And the answer to that question as it pertains to NLRA claims is clearly no. As this court held even before Jones and Laughlin in a case called Aguilines that issued shortly after the NLRA, this court held that the claims under the NLRA are obnoxious to the common law, that there is no common law analogy between claims of retaliation against employees, for example, for unionizing in the common law. In fact, organizing under the common law oftentimes was itself held to be unlawful by employees. So there is no common law soil equivalent to what was at issue in Jarchese, where, you know, the court looked at the SEC fraud claims and said, yeah, this is exactly like fraud claims that had been brought in court of law for hundreds of years. There's nothing equivalent with the NLRA claims in this case. And then second, as to the remedy, I think, you know, Jarchese again provides very helpful guidance on this issue, because what the court focused on in Jarchese is the fact that the remedy that the SEC was seeking in that case involved fines, monetary penalties, things that were specifically designed to punish and deter wrongdoers. That's not what the board is doing here. In fact, that's not what the board is statutorily authorized to do. All the board is allowed to do is to issue make-whole relief. And that's precisely what the board could do were it to issue the Excel remedy that Amazon is complaining about in this case. But one point I'd like to make on that just briefly is that Excel is not the current law under the board. It hasn't been the law law since at least the 1970s. The board has given no indication that it will, in fact, overturn decades of precedent and issue this remedy about which Amazon complains. And so I think, you know, that certainly makes their claim as to the Seventh Amendment issue both speculative and also very case dependent. I know, you know, my opposing counsel didn't get into this, but I think there's a serious question, even setting aside the effective denial issue, as to whether there is jurisdiction over the Seventh Amendment claim, because what they're complaining about is a specific order that might result in a particular board case. It's not a structural issue. It's not like the removal claims in this case that come up in every single board proceeding. The Seventh Amendment claim here is very fact and issue specific to a given case. And those types of claims typically don't defeat exclusive review schemes like that contained in the National Labor Relations Act. And in particular, in the employment context, I would just point the court's attention on the jurisdictional issue to the decision in Elgin v. Department of Treasury, which dealt with similar constitutional claims before the MSPB. And the Supreme Court said that there was no direct jurisdiction for those claims, in part because the underlying merits issues in the employee's claim before the MSPB could resolve or obviate the constitutional issues. It's exactly what could happen here with regard to the Seventh Amendment claim. The board could say, yeah, look, we aren't going to overturn 50 years of precedent. We're just going to order, as in line with what we've done for 50 years, that Amazon needs to bargain. We aren't going to attach any monetary liability at all. And so there wouldn't be even a basis for a Seventh Amendment claim. Obviously, you know, setting aside the fact that the remedies and the cause of action also don't give rise to a Seventh Amendment claim. And just with my remaining time here, I'd just like to touch briefly back to the effective denial argument. And I know there's been a lot of talk about what happened at the September hearing. And there's a couple points that I'd like to direct the court's attention to. First of all, at the outset of that hearing, and this can be found at ROA 547 and 548, Judge Oliveira requested Amazon's position on a motion to intervene. Amazon's response was that they were not prepared to address that issue that day and asked for more time. Second, I'd like to direct the court's attention to what happened at the end of that hearing. Judge Oliveira asked for a ruling or for supplemental briefing by September 27th. Amazon's only response was to ask what time he wanted that briefing by. And when Judge Oliveira said noon, they were perfectly fine with it. And then finally, as to counsel's point about there being a TRO and it being understood that the court needed to rule today, you can look at the transcript of that hearing. That statement was never made. There was never anything even close to that. And so I think the party's lack of diligence in pressing that argument precludes effective denial.
May it please the court, I'm Julie Gutman-Dickinson, here on behalf of Intervenor Teamsters Amazon National Negotiating Committee, TANC, which is the bargaining representative for the thousands of Amazon employees at the Amazon JFK Staten Island, New York location at issue here and at other Amazon facilities across the country. I'd like to briefly hone in on four areas as we urge the court to dismiss this appeal. First, what has been talked about at length here, no effective denial and therefore no jurisdiction. Amazon has improperly bypassed the district court and attempted to turn this court from a court of appeals to a court of first impression, a court of first resort, by inventing a deadline and then claiming that the district court's failure to act by that artificial deadline constituted an effective denial, notwithstanding that at the hearing it acquiesced to briefing on the September 27th, and it was clear the judge ruled on September 29th. And never in the history of the NLRB, I worked there for 10 years before becoming a union side lawyer, have I ever seen the NLRB rule the same day, much less even weeks. It's usually typically months or longer. This court must reject Amazon's attempt to get around Judge Rodriguez's decision and its attempt
There's a continuum there. Let's assume that the briefing had been filed on the 27th. The judge didn't rule for 2 weeks. When would you have an effective denial? The NLRB could have ruled at any time. The R proceeding had been going on for a very, very long time. And the C proceeding had just been sitting there waiting for resolution of the R. At what point would there be an effective denial?
Well, Your Honor, there was no effective denial. The judge issued a decision on Sunday, so the day before their claimed harm could occur on the 30th. So that became irrelevant at that point because the judge actually ruled. And I believe strongly that the decision and the attempt to create the effective denial doctrine into a scheme that any party can use to bypass a district court decision is not an acceptable way to proceed. I'd also like to note that waiver and latches are at issue here. In addition to Amazon's failed effective denial argument, this court should find that Amazon has waived its right to bring this action by failing to expeditiously act even before September 2024. Employees at Amazon JFK facility in New York began to organize and filed ULPs, unfair labor practices, at the NLRB in 2020. Amazon did not raise any constitutional claims then. Instead, it defended itself from those charges, argued its cases before NLRB ALJs, and then appealed to the NLRB by filing exceptions to the judge's decision, never making constitutional claims at any step of the way. When employees filed for a union election in December 2021, Amazon again did not raise any constitutional issues. Amazon filed a request for review with the NLRB in February 2023 and at no time made any constitutional claims. Instead, for 4 years, Amazon participated fully and availed itself of the NLRB process, and it now suddenly claims that that would cause irreparable harm if it was allowed to continue for even one more day. In Flex Frac Logistics, cited in our brief, this court found that that a party had waived an unconstitutional appointment argument that it had not raised before the NLRB. The same principle should apply here to find Amazon likewise waived its rights to bring these constitutional claims. And by the same token, the well-established doctrine of latches forecloses Amazon's arguments because its unexplained delay has caused direct harm to Amazon employees and their bargaining representative. The workers and their union have been forced to expend an inordinate amount of time and resources for years, organizing, litigating, trying to vindicate their rights, and trying to get Amazon to the bargaining table, only to have Amazon pull the rug out from under them years down the line by seeking to invalidate that entire process just as it was about to come to fruition. Third, Amazon will not suffer any irreparable harm from the NLRB process continuing because NLRB orders are not self-enforcing. So if and when NLRB process continues as it should, Amazon would have two ways to protect itself before it be forced to comply. It could challenge the board order itself in the appropriate circuit court. It could wait until the NLRB seeks to enforce its order in an appropriate circuit court. In either case, it can raise every single argument that it raises in this litigation. And in fact, as set forth in our brief, that's exactly what the respondent did in Noel Canning. Finally, the balance of equity strongly favors denying the injunction because granting an injunction here would cause significant irreparable harm to Tank, the employees it represents, and the collective bargaining process. It'll chill workers throughout the country from exercising their rights and threatens chaos and industrial strife, as set forth in detail in our brief.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Cox?
Yes, Your Honor, thank you. Just a few points in rebuttal. Your Honor asked what would happen if the proceeding came to a close. That would moot our constitutional claims, as my colleague mentioned at the September 24th hearing, and that would foreclose our ability to get meaningful relief on appeal. And I will cite the Axon case again. I commend it to Your Honors because that case makes clear that the harm to Amazon is the denial of meaningful relief. And the remedy, it's impossible to remedy once the proceeding is over, said the Supreme Court, which is when appellate review kicks in. Amazon's right to an acceptable adjudicator in the first instance, quote, would be effectively lost. That's the Axon case at 192. Your Honor also mentioned, I think you meant the Free Enterprise Fund case, where the court said that you don't normally require plaintiffs to bet the farm by taking action before testing the validity of the law. That was the Free Enterprise Fund case. So waiting also for review by the Court of Appeals bakes in deference to the agency, and the concurrences by Justices Gorsuch and Thomas in the Axon case make clear that it's no answer that an Article III court may eventually review the agency order. Second, there was some discussion of the fact that Amazon didn't raise claims before the NLRB previously when supposedly it was supposed to. There's no requirement that Amazon have done that, but in any event, some of the claims did not really arise until the R case was concluded. The Seventh Amendment claim only arose when the relief sought in the C case. It was not clear that the board's adverse action in the R case in August 2024 would make the C case go forward. So that was an August 2024 injury. Same with the separation of powers claim. It could not have been brought earlier because it only really arose when it became clear in August 2024 that the tainted board members were not going to recuse themselves. So those are August 2024 injuries that arose. And again, any one of these claims is sufficient for a PI. Third, there was some discussion about the Seventh Amendment. Your Honor asked which is more important, the nature of the cause of action or the remedy. The court said in Jarkissi that the nature of the remedy is the more important consideration and can be all but dispositive. That's Jarkissi at 2129. There was some suggestion that the Seventh Amendment claim is not a structural claim, but as an axon with a removal claim, the question is whether Amazon is going to be subjected to an illegitimate proceeding led by an illegitimate decision maker. That's exactly what we have here. There was discussion about the harm to workers. That is not an irreparable harm. That can be remedied by back pay. By contrast, the injury to Amazon, the Supreme Court said in Axon, is that it cannot be undone. And that is the definition of an irreparable harm. Finally, there was some discussion of effective denial again. And I would just point the court to our complaint at paragraph 100, where we discuss the urgency for relief. And again, my colleague on page 67 reiterated to the court that we needed a decision by September 27. The fact that there was a noon deadline, in fact, was acceptable because that would have given us the opportunity to seek an appeal from this court. So thank you, Your Honors.
Last point, why didn't you wait till noon?
I'm sorry?
On that last point, why didn't you wait until noon?
Well, I don't recall the exact timing, Your Honor. I wish I could give you a better answer.
I thought it was at 5:30 in the morning or very early in the morning.
I'm afraid I don't have a recollection of that timing, Your Honor. We asked the court to enter the preliminary injunction. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We will now get ready to hear the second case of the morning, 24-40315.